The new league year is underway, and the NFL was ready for its moment. The last 48 hours have seen a flurry of moves from, well, pretty much everyone except Seattle. Mike and I break down what it means, how concerned Seahawks fans should be, and what comes next. Let's light them up.
I'm Jackson Bevins, and this is Cigar Thoughts.
Welcome back to the Cigar Lounge. I am Jackson Bevins, and along with my munificent producer, Mike Barwin, this is the Cigar Thoughts podcast. Mike, how are we doing today?
We are doing all right, Jackson. We are through the first wave of free agency, maybe the first couple waves of free agency for the Seahawks, and they have put together quite the haul of names now having really exhilarating
that's one way to
first
put it.
Day in change
yeah, man.
From John Schneider and company.
No, I know it, man. It's one of the things, like, you know, and I've been active on Twitter talking about this. Like, this is something that John Schneider has always done. There is a lot of data supporting the notion that spending the most in free agency does not correlate to winning football games immediately after. They're high risk moves. The thing that I always try and keep in mind is these are players that their team didn't want to pay or couldn't pay this much. Doesn't mean they're bad players, but most great players, their teams find a way to keep them. They restructure deals. They make trades. They do what they got to do. So if someone does reach free agency, I mean, there's very good players out there this year. But I think that we have a tendency to, like, shrink the universe to just these players. And now it's like, you know, the best linebacker on the market, we start talking about like they're the best linebacker in the NFL. And it's just not the case. It's the best ones available. The Seahawks have historically not spent very much money. In fact, most years, not any money in that first wave of free agency. They are willing to let other teams spend the most money on those positions. However, I cannot remember a first 2 days of free agency that moved this fast with this many signings, with this many of the top tier free agents at each of the positions. So yeah, maybe it is a touch more concerning this year that they didn't sign anyone right away.
Well, we'll get into this later, but there have been some departures from the roster
that
move the needle. And so there are some holes that need to be filled. And obviously we've talked about this, you know, there are a lot of avenues to filling those holes, but some needs just got more pressing in some areas that were already highlighted with concern. So, you know, they're going to have their work cut out for them, but that's what the whole game's about.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And I've been looking forward to diving into all the action with you. But first, if you're listening or you're watching us right now, it's hopefully because you like the show. And if you like the show, there are a few ways you can support it. If you're on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, take a couple of seconds to leave us a 5-star rating. And if you're feeling super supportive, a quick review as well. You can do that right now. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you'll find full video episodes, entertaining clips, and the audio reads of every Cigar Thoughts article. This is probably the best way you can support the show and help us grow. And it's the growth that's going to enable us to bring more of our football discourse your way. So we're grateful for the few seconds it takes to like and subscribe. And as always, you can get your official Cigar Thoughts cigars at CigarThoughtsNFL.com. Sponsored by Seattle Cigar Concierge. Mike, look, man, there has been a ton of money spent in the last 48 hours, and there's a lot more money to spend. I mean, the cap got kicked up to $255 million, which is like a $30 million pump. The largest single season salary cap increase, I think, in league history. So there are teams that have gone out and spent a lot of money, and I think the first place to start, honestly, just league-wide, is with the quarterbacks. I mean, it's really rare to see this much action in free agency at this position because most teams are making sure that they are set with their guy and not having to pay market premium for somebody else's old guy, or saying, okay, you know, we're going to make sure that this is something we want to do in the draft. But we saw Kirk Cousins go from Minnesota to Atlanta and get $180 million. If he... 100 of it's guaranteed. if he hits that 180, he will have made over $300 million in salary in his career, which I think makes him the highest earning NFL player of all time. The guy's won one playoff game and will have made the most on-field money of anyone ever. We've also seen our old friend Russell Wilson cuck the Broncos by going to the Steelers for the veteran minimum and making Denver pay the other $38 million.
Honestly, Russ is just speed running like Seahawks Super Bowl opponents. So before the end of the calendar year, he'll be a New England Patriot, I'm positive.
Yeah, man. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen anything like that where, I mean, it's like Denver can't stop getting kicked in the nuts by this trade.
Like, dude, it's more than twice the greatest dead cap hit in NFL history.
Yeah, I think it was Matt Ryan at like $41 million, something like that, when Atlanta moved on from him. And it's just like, they have to do that this year, and then they have to do it again next year. And the Steelers are like, yeah, our quarterback sucks. Like, we'll take a shot on you for $1 million. And Russ is still getting paid. So you got that going on. You've got Baker Mayfield, who is experiencing like his fourth career resurgence already. He took a one-year, $4 million prove-it deal last year. Played great, honestly. Got the Bucs to the playoffs. Won a playoff game. And now he gets 3 years, $100 million, I think. I think maybe 50 of it's guaranteed, something like that. And then below that threshold, you've got Gardner Minshew getting not nothing from the Raiders. And so I think it's 2 years, $25 million.
Sam Darnold going to the Vikings.
Yeah. Jacoby Brissett headed back to New England. Yep. Keep that seat warm for Russ. I mean, it's there's a lot of movement on the quarterback front. And honestly, it's interesting because a lot of this is positioning for the draft. This is a draft where, like last year, the quarterbacks headline the draft class. And that's common in the modern NFL, but this year more so, where I think the consensus is that the first three picks in this draft are going to be quarterbacks. And I'm not sure that we've ever seen that before. So as you look around, I mean, here are the teams that need quarterbacks going into the draft or should be strongly considering a quarterback going into the draft. You've got Chicago, obviously, at number one. You've got Washington at number two. You've got New England at number three. But then you've got Denver. I think they're at 11. Minnesota at 12. Somewhere in there. The Raiders. I mean, I'm not taking them off the board. The Seahawks, maybe. The Saints, maybe. I mean, How did the quarterback movement affect the way that you're looking into this draft from a quarterback positional need?
I mean, first off, shouts to Kirk Cousins for being one of the greatest bag getters we've ever seen in our lives. Like, just unbelievable stuff.
Yeah.
The great domino that is yet to fall is Justin Fields.
Right? That's true.
And great the way point. That everything has gone down so far, I think it makes sense that that'll happen after the draft, because teams will delude themselves into thinking they have a shot at one of those three quarterbacks. And you said that the first three picks will end up quarterbacks. Who knows? You know, maybe somebody's going to try to hop Arizona to get Marvin Harrison Jr. at three and pay a king's ransom for that. And then Jaden Daniels will fall down somewhere. And so he will be more accessible for teams. And so however that shakes out, then Justin Fields' value is going to be by default kind of at a premium, because there will be a team heading into the season who did not get their guy in the draft who needs somebody, or at least needs somebody they can talk themselves into. And I think that we both agree that Justin Fields has a lot of untapped potential, and him ending up in Chicago didn't do him any favors, but
of course, yeah.
You know, there's a lot of clay to mold there. So
no question. Well, let me ask you this. You're looking at the quarterbacks in this draft, knowing that there's only 1 year left on his rookie deal, and that if he hits, you're going to have to pay him a real contract sooner than you would a rookie. But even with all of that factored in, where would Justin Fields rank on your draft board this year? Like, how many of the quarterbacks in this draft would you rather have on your team than Justin Fields?
With his contract
and the everything remainder with,
in mind?
Yes. Would you rather have Caleb Williams?
Yes.
Would you rather have Drake May?
Yes.
Would you rather have Jaden Daniels?
Yes.
Would you rather have JJ McCarthy?
I mean, we've talked about this. I'm not a JJ guy by any means, but the Justin Fields thing is weird. He's just such an unknown. Maybe we just have PTSD from Russ being so frantic in the pocket and dropping his eyes and looking to run a lot of the time. But that's just not like a brand of quarterback. And I know it's generalizing, of course, but I'm just really not looking to dive back into that. But also, I'm not a JJ McCarthy guy. So I think that's where the conversation starts to get interesting, at least.
Yeah, I think tomorrow, Justin Fields is more likely to win an NFL game than JJ McCarthy.
Yes.
JJ McCarthy being 20 years old and being the winner and being all of this stuff. Honestly, the fact that he played for Harbaugh is going to matter a lot to the NFL. And like, there's going to be a lot of GMs that want to get their hands on him for 4 years, knowing they have a fifth year option and seeing what he can become. But I think that right now, Justin Fields is probably a better NFL quarterback. But you're right. You know, I think that's where it is. I feel the same way about Michael Penix. I think that Michael Penix is probably more suited to win an NFL game tomorrow than JJ McCarthy is. But he's 24 years old. He's had four season-ending injuries, right? I mean, there's marks on Michael Penix that don't exist for McCarthy. And so it's sounding, I mean, JJ's getting gassed up, man. Like, it's sounding more and more like he's going to go in the top 10, maybe top 5.
The lottery is looking more and more realistic, which, again, like the Josh Allen thing, I mean, that's a comparison point by way of the fact that he was the toolsy guy where you didn't really see as much. I mean, you saw the winning with JJ, but he was surrounded with an unbelievable team, great infrastructure, great coaching, all that stuff. The margin for error was a lot larger than for Josh Allen at Wyoming, of course. But the mobility, the arm, the ability to throw on the run, all that, teams are going to look to buy themselves some leash with that growth potential.
You know what I mean? Totally. And we're going to talk a lot of draft over the next few weeks. But like, one thing is, I will say I am warming to the idea of JJ McCarthy as an NFL quarterback. Not necessarily for the Seahawks or anything like that.
Just like Danny said, like if they pull the trigger on him, you'll immediately talk yourself into it.
Yeah, and I kind of already
would be possible.
I kind of already am. I was guilty of just kind of assuming, because I didn't watch a ton of Michigan until towards the end of the season, and they weren't asking him to do much. But honestly, it was the way he played at the end of that Alabama game in the semifinal, where I was like, okay, this is not just the little pop a shot BB gun arm. Like this kid can wing it. He's got the juice for sure. He seems like the type of guy you can trust to be the face of the franchise, all of that. So, you know, the Falcons, though, were a team that a lot of people have speculated would take a quarterback at 8 or trade to move up. Now, with Kirk Cousins in tow, they're off the board. And so they feel like a really likely trade down candidate. Like, I think that they become a target. And let's see, who's at 5? The Chargers aren't going to take a quarterback. The Giants might try and take a quarterback, but I could see them maybe trading.
Hey, I don't know about that. Whatever. They got their QB signal caller of the future in Drew Lock now.
That's right. Drew Lock.
That might change some things.
Oh man. Enjoy that discourse.
Recalibrate, buddy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And so, yeah, it becomes really interesting because then you've got the Titans, and all indications are they're going to see what they can do with Will Levis. They just brought in Calvin Ridley. Try and give him a weapon. So yeah, that jockeying for position is going to be super interesting at the quarterback position. And then, I mean, shit, the rest of the free agency movement that we've seen, there have been some big players signing big contracts, man. Like, to me, the thing that stood out the most is, I mean, are we seeing a running back revival in the eyes of the NFL? We're not seeing crazy money. There's no Zeke Elliott $90 million contracts being given out, but there's running backs making $8 to $12 million a year again.
Yeah. DJ Dallas, 3 for 8. That's big stuff. The market is moving, my friend, and he is merely evidence. No, I mean, the Saquon move from the Giants to the Eagles is cold-blooded, but in a way that I'm really excited to see play out on the field.
Yeah.
But like Josh Jacobs to the Packers, like they let Aaron Jones go, who ends up in Minnesota. Like, teams clearly still value the position. And as we've talked about this, as linebackers and defensive linemen are lighter than they've ever been as they move more and more into the NFL.
That's right.
The league is cyclic, right? Like, it comes and goes. there's push and pull. And as players on defense get lighter, coaches are going to be more and more apt to just pound the fucking rock, which is reasonable.
Well, and here's the thing. I mean, I don't know if you remember, it's got to be 2 years ago at least when we had Matt Nichols on. We were talking offensive line. And this was when too high safety had just really started to become like the base defense, the prevalent base defense in the NFL. And teams became obsessive with shutting down explosive plays. And it has worked. Last season, we saw the fewest yards in like 15 years. We saw the fewest points in like 17 years. It's worked. And what did Matt say way back at the very beginning? He says the way to beat the two high safeties are to run the fucking football. You have to bring those safeties up, because if you can't run the ball well, then there's no reason for them to open up the back half of the field. They're just going to sit back there. And you're right. The NFL is cyclical. I do think there was a time where running backs didn't matter that much. But I think we're entering into a chapter of the NFL's evolution where the new market inefficiency is going to be being able to run the football really effectively to open up the pass game again and kind of get back to that old school run to set up the pass. And these teams are willing to invest. I mean, the Ravens with Derrick Henry, that's just as sexy of a connection as Saquon to the Eagles. I think Josh Jacobs could smash in Green Bay, to be honest. Like, that offense rips. And Aaron Jones, who's 29, finished the season with, what, 5 straight 100-yard games? And now, you know, he stays in the division going to Minnesota. But, like, I love Aaron Jones. I think Josh Jacobs has more juice at 26 years old than Aaron Jones does. So I think he could be a needle mover. Tony Pollard going back home. He's a Memphis kid. Went to the University of Memphis. He's back in Tennessee. He's going to be splitting work with Tyjae Spears down there. But he got a real contract, 3 years, $24 million. Same contract that DeAndre Swift got going to Chicago. That one was a little curious for me. If I'm Chicago, I don't think that I'm prioritizing spending money on a running back.
Especially when you already got a god like Travis Homer on your roster. My Lord.
Right. That's $8 million a year to back up Travis Homer. It seems a little excessive.
Yeah.
But no,
Poles does it again.
Yeah. They've got Roschon Johnson there. They got Khalil Herbert there. So that one's interesting. We'll see, you know, what the fallout is there. You had the Bengals ready to cut Joe Mixon and then trading him at the last minute to the Texans while they bring in Zach Moss. Another player that I really like. I thought Zach Moss was excellent filling in for Jonathan Taylor last year. I mean, there's some real movement from running backs that matter to their teams this year. Devin Singletary going to the Giants. He's stepping in for Saquon. I mean, a lot of shuffling of the chairs.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there was a lot of people swapping teams. The first thing that comes to mind for another one of the cold-blooded intradivisional moves was Patrick Queen going from the Ravens to the Steelers, as well as Geno Stone going from the Ravens to the Bengals, which prompted some needling from Isaiah Likely and teammates all over the place. You know, the painful rival to rival movement, but that had some implication for the Seahawks, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of speculation that some of these Ravens were going to follow Mike McDonald over to Seattle. I mean, some of their best players were free agents this year. They locked up Justin Madubuike in the middle of that defense. That was always kind of a pipe dream. But I think you and I thought there was real smoke around Patrick Queen and Geno Stone coming over. What does it tell you that Mike McDonald presumably did not bang the table to bring either of those guys over?
Patrick Queen got what, like 341?
Yeah, 3 years, $41 million.
That was very doable. And the linebacker market wasn't crazy. Like, he looked like the guy that was going to get paid a premium, and that was not really it. You know, like, you're getting like Leonard Williams. We'll dive into this, but he got, for what is he, like 29-year-old defensive tackle?
Yeah, I think 30 when the season starts.
He got 21 and a half per year.
Yeah.
And the top linebacker on the market ended up getting what, like 13 and a half or so?
Yeah. Yeah. Right about there. Yeah, it is.
Off ball linebacker, that is.
Of course. Right. Yeah. I mean, edge is a different beast entirely. And yeah, we saw big movement on defensive lines too. And I do want to talk about that next. But the thing about Patrick Queen, like, it's exciting to think, okay, the guy just absolutely exploded playing for Mike McDonald. Let's bring him in. But like, I was only focused on Patrick Queen because they didn't re-sign Jordan Brooks. And I really thought Seattle, especially once I heard, I think 3 years, 30 was what was initially reported. I think it's actually 3 years, $26 million. Man, very surprising to me that they didn't pay that money to Jordan Brooks, keep him in the middle of the defense.
Yeah. Well, we've been touting Jordan Brooks as the heir apparent to Bobby Wagner since they drafted him. And since he looked like a player who was worthy of spending a pick in, well, like the mid-20s on. And
I think he's been good.
Yeah, he's been good, and he dealt with a really difficult late season injury the season before last.
Yep.
And he came back and was ready for week one and played pretty much the whole year. Obviously, there's some fatigue that happens when you're coming off of an injury like that. Another great example is Jamal Adams later in this season. Yep. But I don't know. Again, that's a deal that they absolutely could have done if they really wanted to, and they just chose not to. So yeah. That, I guess, speaks more to their confidence in their upcoming zero linebacker defense, which I'm really excited to see.
Yeah, man.
It'll be a really innovative part of the game moving forward.
Exactly. Mike McDonald going to set the league on edge running a 4-0-7. It's going to be awesome. Five high safety, two man corners. Going to be great. I do want to talk about all of the moves that Seattle has made in a second, but a lot of other movement from some pretty big names in the league this year. Outside of what we talked about already, what stood out to you the most out of the moves you've seen in the first couple of days?
That David Tepper continues to not know what the fuck he's doing.
I mean, boy, did he just step right in for Dan Snyder as just like the most incompetent owner in the NFL?
Dude, it's like the NFL owner version of Patrick Mahomes coming up right at the tail end of Tom Brady's career.
Yes.
Yeah. He assumed the mantle seamlessly.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. But I mean, they could have traded Brian Burns to the Rams for, wasn't it reported that there were a couple of firsts on
two
the table?
Two firsts and a second.
Which is like,
I mean, and that's verified information.
That's an outrageous haul to trade for a player who is by all accounts young and has been very good since he stepped into the league. But then they ended up getting what, like a second and a fifth for him to trade him to the Giants?
Yeah, second and a fifth. Brian Burns, 26-year-old, dominant pass rusher.
Absolutely.
He's like 12th in pressures since he and 12th in sacks, I think, since he entered the league. I mean, a guy that didn't want to be in Carolina. They've had multiple two first round offers, including from the Rams. I mean, two firsts and a second. Thank God, I guess. I don't want him in the NFC West. Now it's a second and a fifth, which, okay, you're clearing the decks. Like, all right, you don't want to pay him $20-something million a year. You probably should. You don't have anybody else that's like great on that roster. There's literally no other great players on that roster. But then you turn around and you give Robert Hunt the guard, $20 million, 5 years, $100 million for a guard, money that you're not going to give to Brian Burns. Like, they literally turned down the largest trade compensation for a non-quarterback in NFL history just to get one more season from him in a two-win year, let him go for a second and a fifth, and then give his money to a guard. What is going on over there, man? I would be apoplectic. I don't think I could be a Panthers fan right now.
Hey, man, they traded for Deontay Johnson. All is good.
Yeah, I do like Deontay Johnson.
I do too. And they signed Damian Lewis, 4 years, $53 million. So I mean, the strategy is clear, right? You're building around Bryce.
Yes.
The cost has been sunk. So make it, you know, build around the quarterback. I think you and I both believe that there's something salvageable there with Bryce, but I don't think he's CJ Stroud by any stretch of the imagination.
No, I still think Bryce can be a good NFL quarterback, but like, situation matters. I mean, the last prince that was promised was Trevor Lawrence, and we saw what happened when you send someone like that to a dysfunctional situation. It's too difficult for a 21-year-old quarterback. Everything that comes, we talk all the time about everything that comes with being the starting quarterback for an NFL team, and especially as a rookie, especially as the number one overall pick, like, that's a challenging thing. But teams that are usually picking number one overall are picking number one overall for a reason. It's because they stink. And oftentimes teams that stink from the top down. And the Panthers are definitely that. You mentioned Deontay Johnson going there. That's just, hey, I'm going to the highest bidder. Like if you're going to try and win the Super Bowl, Carolina's the last place you're going to go. Similar decision, Calvin Ridley signing with the Titans. That is a bad getting move. I'm going to take care of me and my family. You ain't winning over there. Gabe Davis taking a spot in Jacksonville. You know, we've seen some wide receiver movement. I don't know that any of these guys are A-list wide receivers, kind of B-C-list wide receivers, but these are good players. And then you also saw teams prioritize keeping these good wide receivers. Obviously, Seattle restructured Tyler Lockett. There was talk, would he be a post-June 1st cut? T. Higgins got franchised by the Bengals. He's saying he wants to get traded. I just don't see any way the Bengals are set up to compete for a Super Bowl right now. I don't see them trading T. Higgins at this point. Mike Evans signed in Tampa Bay, which is just great. Like, Mike Evans, his career is like one of the most underrated careers of wide receiver we've ever seen. 1,000 yards every single season. He dominated again last year. Cool that it looks like he's going to end his career in Tampa Bay. And then you also had the Colts basically give the DK Metcalf contract to Michael Pittman Jr. So, you know, there have been teams that are prioritizing keeping their own guys. And I think as a relief to both you and I, you mentioned him earlier, Seattle did that with Leonard Williams. You know, they traded essentially what the Giants traded to get Brian Burns to get Leonard Williams. They traded a second and a fifth last year. Now, difference being you don't have to give Leonard Williams Brian Burns money. And I'm not going to lie, Leonard Williams, 3 years, $64 million. That's less than what I was bracing myself for.
Yeah. I mean, it was a position of need. He was a piece that a defensive head coach would absolutely want to incorporate as he comes into the fold. And I mean, you can't compete if you don't have good players. And the Seahawks let some decent to good players. I think that we're both pretty high on Jordan Brooks. But make your linebackers' lives easier by putting a gigantic body in the middle that eats up blockers.
Yeah, and that's just it. Like, you might get a couple games a year where Leonard Williams really fills up the stat sheets, but that's not how most defensive tackles really butter their bread. These guys are there to disrupt. When you see the high sack totals from edge rushers, a lot of times it's because they have a very disruptive defensive tackle playing next to them. And that's what Leonard Williams does. And we never really got to see him and Uchenna Nwosu on the field at the same time last year. And I think that that's something that's very exciting. In fact, Seattle is basically keeping their entire defensive line intact. My question for you, because I do want to talk about the Seahawks next. You look at what Christian Wilkins got, right? He was the biggest name on the defensive line. Available. He's a Miami Dolphin coming up for a big contract. The Raiders, I think, kind of surprised everyone by plunking down for him. He ended up signing for 4 years, $110 million. So what's my math? That's $27.5 million a year. Real money. Would you rather have Christian Wilkins at 28 years old for 4 years, $110 million, or Leonard Williams at 30 years old for 3 and 64?
I think I would probably go Leonard Williams by way of the savings, in the sense that it gives you a bit more space to make another splash move. I think we talked about the Seahawks tending to sit out the first wave of free agency. That wasn't the case last year when they signed Draymond Jones to a big deal. Mm-hmm. And so I think he's been pretty vocal on Twitter about feeling miscast in the defensive system this past season. So we'll see how that actually manifests.
He's got to be so stoked. He's got to be stoked watching tape of that Ravens defense and how they use their interior defensive linemen and be like, right. And you're going to put Big Cat next to me? Like, yeah. I think
Christian Wilkins contract doesn't preclude you from having like a market setting defensive lineman. Max Crosby is, I guess, the best.
Raiders might make a little noise next year, man.
It's fun. I mean, hey, the AFC West should be up for grabs for the next 10 years, right?
Yeah, man. God damn.
Easy mountain to summit right there.
Oh, man. That would be so. I mean, the Seahawks are dealing with 49ers, so I think have done the best non-quarterback roster building of any team in the NFL over the last 10 years. we know as Seahawks fans how steep of a mountain that is to climb. But this isn't like being the AFC East against the Tom Brady Patriots. This isn't like being in the AFC West against the Patrick Mahomes Chiefs, where it almost just feels inevitable. Like, you just need so many things to go wrong for them and to go right for you. Like, everything went wrong for the Chiefs last year. They still won the fucking Super Bowl. So it's just like, you know.
And we are so blessed.
Thank God. Thank you. Thank you, Patrick. That was wonderful to see. But like, honestly, it really is something where if you're the Raiders, take your shot, you know, take your shot, go get Christian Wilkins. And you put Max Crosby, I think, was either the most or second most double team player in the NFL last year. Can't do that anymore. So Max Crosby getting single teamed with maybe like a tight end chipping, he's going to have an amazing year and get paid a shit ton of money. So that's a very fun move as well. But you look at the Seahawks, and there were so many players that were moving, including players moving off of their roster. And Seattle was just sitting on their hands. In fact, I think they were the very last team. It was either them or the Cowboys, the very last team to bring in a player that wasn't already on their roster this season in free agency. Can you give me the rundown real quick of everyone they kept and everyone they lost, and then who they brought in? Because today they've been a little bit more active.
Yep. So we mentioned Leonard Williams on the 3-year deal. They retained Noah Fant for 2 years, $21 million. What, just lightning round, what were your thoughts on retaining Fant?
I was surprised. I was really surprised. I thought Disley was going to be gone. I don't think that was an extension that they should have given in the first place.
He went to the Chargers on a 3-year, $14 million deal.
I didn't think there was any way that Seattle was going to pay for Noah Fant, because I think that he was the highest upside guy in terms of just freak athlete, you know, top 15 pick, had the pedigree. We've seen the explosion from him. I was just like, there's going to be a team that cares more about having that, that Seattle's not going to pay for it. But then our boy Colby Parkinson, yep, surprised everyone. He's going back home to Los Angeles. He's going to the Rams. He got real money. He got $15 million guaranteed. Shout out Colby Parkinson. Get that money. You just got married. You got a kid next week. You're heading back home. Great month, man. Happy to see it. Wish it wasn't the Rams, but like, that's awesome. So that changes the calculus a little bit. All of a sudden, Fant, I think, moves up your priority list, and Seattle took care of him. 2 years, $21 million. I'm sleeping easy paying Noah Fant that money.
So then quickly to go through the other guys that they retained, you got Michael Jackson. They tendered him a fifth round tender for a restricted free agent. They tendered John Rattigan. They brought Artie Burns back, and they did not tender Daryl Taylor, but according to Bob Condotta, they did extend him. I don't think the numbers are out on that yet. But sticking in the tight end room, Pharaoh Brown from the Patriots, a one-year yep. deal, $3.2 million up to $3.9
million. A PFF darling.
Yes. Yes, he came out of Oregon and had a devastating knee injury. So
he is, and let's be clear, he is a blocking tight end who can catch. But I think PFF had him as their highest rated tight end.
He finally hit the minimum threshold.
He like barely played enough snaps to qualify. He is not a game changer, but he's one of those players that coaches love because he's going to do exactly what you ask. I think he slots into the Disley Parkinson kind of role.
Couple of offensive linemen they brought in. Nick Harris, he played center at Washington, but he played some left tackle for the Browns, I guess.
They moved him around. He played tackle, guard, and then he finished the season as their fullback. So
that's utility. Nick Ballore, who? Yeah, put him exactly at linebacker. Might as well.
I think that's, I mean, what was it? 1 year, $2.5 million, something like that. That is a depth signing. You can never have too many offensive linemen. I think that if you expanded rosters by five players, a lot of coaches would add five offensive linemen to their roster.
They also had a homecoming on their hands, bringing back George Fant, local
legend. Welcome back, George.
And then they brought in a safety from the Jags, Rayshon Jenkins.
Let's talk about him, because we haven't mentioned very obvious news that they let Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs go, essentially leaving Julian Love as the only safety that saw real snaps at the position last year. I know that they were in the process of transitioning Kobe Bryant over. They drafted Jarek Reed, I think, in like the seventh round last year. But really, it was, as far as snaps goes, just Julian Love. So tell me about Rayshon Jenkins.
Yeah, so drafted in 2017 by the Chargers. He was there throughout his rookie deal, then signed with the Jaguars in 21. Been there the past three seasons, and now he is a member of your Seattle Seahawks. But he's kind of an advanced stat darling.
Yeah.
He had a really low passer rating as the nearest defender out of the safety group. I want to say he was like the third lowest.
Yeah.
He had exactly some of the lowest like completion percentage over expectation allowed among that group. So, you know, I don't think he's necessarily a big needle moving name at first glance, but you know, Mike McDonald, as he implements his system, the thinking is, you know, Geno Stone, I think Baltimore retained him. He was a seventh round pick, and then they just kind of brought him back on a 1 year prove it deal. And then he got, you know, a sizable contract with the Bengals. So as you move away from Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs, I mean, maybe there's a potential for reunion with one of those guys, but
yeah,
Julian Love and Rayshon Jenkins might be the new norm as things settle back to more around league average in terms of investment in the safety position.
I mean, Seattle has paid safety position more than any team in the NFL over the last 10 years, you know, and part of that, and
John Schneider said enough of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. And you know, it's interesting with Mike McDonald coming over. We all saw how amazing Kyle Hamilton, who look, I mean, he's, I think he went 14th overall. He's one of the best safeties to come out of college in the last 5 years, all of that, of course, but there was only one player that had a higher coverage success rate than Rayshon Jenkins last year, and it was Kyle Hamilton. So if that is something that Mike McDonald, and I don't know, maybe he cares about the shit, maybe he doesn't, but if he does, that's a reason to get a little excited. Someone who was that effective in coverage, that's helpful. That's helpful, because I like Julian Love more than you do, but I'm not going to sit here and say he's a perfect player. Like, he had some whiffs last year. He also had some huge plays. And having a guy like Quandre Diggs next to him, I think, was super helpful, because Quandre is so dependable. If Rayshon can be that kind of coverage safety, it is going to help this team out a lot.
Maybe he's a difference maker. Maybe he's the Pharaoh Brown of safeties. Time will tell. But right. Those are the names that have come in so far. And I think that leads us to one last departure. I think we've touched on everybody by now. And that is Bobby Wagner signing a one-year deal with the Washington Commanders, reuniting with Dan Quinn.
Hey, the greatest Seahawk of this generation, man. I mean, this is our second time saying goodbye. And what a blessing to get to say goodbye to Bobby Wagner a second time. It's tough because Seattle's only lost linebackers so far this offseason. And so but I don't think either of us expected Bobby Wagner to be back.
No.
He led the NFL in tackles. He set a career high with 183 tackles last year. But I think a lot of that is because
that's such a depressing statistic.
It is. You don't want your guy leading the NFL in tackles, because it means your defense is on the field a lot. And also, there aren't other guys getting tackles. So, you know, God bless Bobby. I hope he has an amazing year. And I hope he wins another All-Pro. He's a Hall of Famer, all that stuff. But the Seahawks got no linebackers, no off-ball linebackers anyway. Like, how concerned are you as a Seahawks fan? How concerned are you that Seattle is in the position they're in roster-wise here in the middle of March?
It's concerning, for sure. It's concerning. The draft is ahead, and you know, we'll dive into this in more detail, but we are in agreement on being greater fans of drafting best player available rather than for need.
Yes.
And pigeonholing your strategy in the draft is not ideal. But the thing that makes me feel better about this is that Bobby Wagner going to Washington leads me to believe there's a wink, wink, nudge, nudge deal to bring back the guy himself, Cody Barton.
No.
It might be time. Oh, it might be time, Jackson.
Hey, look, you know what? If Mike McDonald wants him, great. Everything I've heard, it was don't let the door hit you on the way out with Cody Barton. And I've heard that from people close to the team. So who knows? It's new era, new coaching staff. Maybe. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think that it's important. Like, yes, I am concerned. I have been preaching patience and a little bit of optimism with Seattle sitting out the first wave of free agency this year like they do most years. But free agency moved a lot faster this year than any other year I can remember. And all of a sudden, it's like, okay, 48 hours go by. That's almost everybody that's really moving the needle. And Seattle's been sitting on their hands. The thing that I want to remind everyone of, and like my temperance is not manufactured. I'm not like picking an angle and having a take on like, hey guys, it's okay. Maybe it's not okay. But March 12th is not the day that I'm going to start shoveling dirt on an offseason with a brand new coaching staff, because there are still a lot of trades that are going to happen as you get closer to the draft and during the draft. Yes, Seattle has 7 picks right now. That is going to change one way or another. There are a lot of cuts that are still going to happen between now and the beginning of the year. And it feels like, okay, they've got a handful of guys and a ton of holes. Need I remind you that when training camp started, we're talking late summer, the Rams had more rookies on their roster than non-rookies. And these weren't high-drafted players. I think they had 2 picks in the top. They had 1 pick in the top 75 last year. They had 10 picks round 5 and on. We wrote them off, you and I did, during our NFC West preview
episode. We rarely wrote them off. We wrote them off with an asterisk.
We did, but we talked about it as a two. I mean, so silly. I'll own my silly takes in hindsight. We talked about the NFC West as a 2-team division between the Seahawks and 49ers. And here are the Rams in the playoffs and coming 1 point shy of winning a playoff game. And they made it all the way through the draft, all the way through the next round of cuts in free agency with nobody, really, in terms of like big offseason additions, but good coaching, good scouting. You end up getting there. I like to think that there is good coaching in Seattle right now. So I'm not saying like, oh, just cut a blank check to John Schneider and, you know, oh, he can do no wrong, whatever. I have concerns. But there is so much that is left to happen. We have not seen 10% of the offseason moves that are going to happen between now and when the season starts.
There's no sense in giving a letter grade now when there's so much to be done ahead. So,
yeah. And because Seattle didn't open up the checkbook in a big way so far, they are going to have more resources. They're going to have more effective cap space. When some of these other cuts come, when other trade opportunities pop up, they will have the ability to take on contracts that teams that have spent money on second tier, you know, giving $20 million a year to second tier guards, they're not going to have the ability to compete with Seattle for those players. So, yeah, they're going to churn the roster. They're going to work the edges. No big splashes so far, but there is so much that can still happen. So my question to you, Mike, is how concern. I know you said that there's some concern. I feel it too. But if one is everything is fine, the Seahawks are going to have an incredible roster come opening day. And 10 is, holy shit, this team is on the verge of being the Panthers. Where are you at?
Like a 3 or a 4. Yeah. Like I don't think that it like warrants that much, you know, panic or anything because, yeah, again, there's so much time between now and week one of the season. I am more worried, I will say, about the Seahawks being a playoff team in 2024 than I was a few days ago.
That's fair. Yeah, I feel that too. Right now, time stamped, I do feel that way. Like, they have more holes now than they did a week ago, and that's a tough thing. You know, last question for you, and I'm thinking through what my answer is as I pose this to you. But what, if any, signings have you seen this year where you're like, fuck, man, I would have done that. Why didn't the Seahawks do that?
The Danielle Hunter for 2 years in Houston, I liked a lot, mm-hmm, but I'm not necessarily sure. I don't know. Like, the greatest cheat code in the NFL is getting home with 4, right?
Yes.
So, you know, getting more and more edge rushers, you can never have too many. You can never have too many guys to get after the quarterback. So,
yeah, I think the two that kind of stand out to me, because what did Danielle Hunter get? He got,
it's like 250, 249 or something like that.
It's a lot of money. So he's a very good player. He's worth it.
Yeah. And again, the injury factor is tough for that as well.
Well, that's just it, right? I mean, when you spend that much money on a player, your risk factor goes up too. For me, it is two guys that we've talked about already. I would have loved to have seen Jordan Brooks back for the contract that the Dolphins gave him. And yeah. I would have really been excited about Geno Stone coming over from the Ravens. I think that was a pretty doable contract.
He ended up getting less than I expected with all the talk that there was, for sure. And yeah, I mean, Jordan Brooks is, I guess, at the top of the list. I guess I assume that you meant outside of that. That was implicit.
Right, but, yeah. Yeah, I would have thought that he would have been priority number two behind Leonard Williams. But I did feel a great deal of relief when we got the notification that Leonard Williams was sticking around. And not just because of sunk cost, right? Well, you gave up this much for him, so now you have to sign him. Like, no, you don't. And Mike McDonald wasn't here for that trade. So if they've got a plan for him, you know, he was my number one priority coming in this offseason. If you said, you know, you can only pick one move for Seattle, that's the one I would have chose. So that part was good, but man, I do feel like, and what, Geno Stone, 2 years, $14 million.
Yeah,
that'd be all right to have back there, to be completely honest with you.
But again, you know, he's had 1 year of production. So yes. if Mike McDonald and company didn't feel comfortable doing that, I mean, that doesn't make me feel worse about their offseason with them not making that move.
Totally fair.
I would rather have them kept Quandre than make that deal, I guess.
Well, and that's not necessarily off of the table. Like, that's the thing. No one has signed Quandre Diggs yet. No one has signed Jamal Adams yet. And I think Justin Simmons is still out there. Like, there's still safety talent available in free agency with most of the money spent. I mean, this is the market inefficiency with waiting. Yeah, a lot of the best players at these positions that were available are going to be gone, but premiums were paid for most of them. Now, there is real talent that makes it through those first couple of waves, and Seattle's going to be positioned to take a run. So I'm not even writing off a Quandre Diggs return, to be completely honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, it could happen, but I feel like a lot of the times when players get cut, it's kind of a retribution thing or a pride thing where it's like, all could right, be. Well, on to the next one.
Yep. Yep. Same time, man. Dude's got to get paid. Dude's got to get paid. And if the Seahawks are going to pay him, I bet he comes back. And I bet everybody, he's going to walk back into that locker room. It'll be like the Roy Williams gif of him walking into the North Carolina basketball locker room. Everyone starts jumping around, dumping water on him. I feel like Quandre Diggs has that kind of juice in the locker room. So I especially when you lose a Bobby Wagner, and for what it's worth, your special teams captain, Nick Ballore, to get one of your captains back would be cool. We'll see if it happens. But, you know, overall, not the first 2 days of free agency that I would have hoped for necessarily, but nothing so far has me super scared.
No, we can keep ringing this bell, but a lot of moves to be made. So let's, we'll keep checking in throughout the offseason and we can amend these answers.
Yeah.
And you know, and scrub we will. The records and scrub the records, get rid of right. the receipts so that we're constantly right.
I mean, we've never been wrong. We're not going to start now.
Not yet. Not yet. And we won't be.
All right, y'all. That's going to do it for today. As always, you can find Mike and I on social media. I am on Twitter at Jackson Bevins. That's JACSON. Remember that no K is okay when spelling my name. Mike is on Twitter at Mike Barwin. And the show itself is at Cigar Thoughts. You can catch full video episodes on our YouTube channel at Cigar Thoughts and find the rest of our socials at CigarThoughtsNFL.com. This episode is brought to you by Glenfiddich Premium Single Malt Scotch Whiskey. I've long been a big fan of their lineup and we are thrilled to have them on board as a sponsor of the show. If you're watching on YouTube, you've seen me enjoying a glass of their latest delectable 14-year release. If you want a scotch that combines an initial kick with an incredibly smooth finish, Glenfiddich is for you. And one of the great things about a great scotch is how well it plays with a good cigar. Speaking of, we do have our own special release of cigars that you can purchase at a terrific price as a listener of the show. Until now, you've been able to order your own bundle of 10 for just $169, which is less than half of what this blend sells for in cigars on the open market. But because of the success of the Cigar Thoughts release, we have lowered the price to just $149, and we are going to keep it there. That's right, only $149 for a bundle of 10. As many of you know, we partnered with one of the most prestigious cigar manufacturers in the world to release these official Cigar Thoughts cigars, which you can order directly from CigarThoughtsNFL.com. Just follow the link on the show page to get these easy-to-smoke stogies filled with 13-year-aged premium Dominican tobacco leaf, or hit us up on Twitter or Instagram, and we'll send you the details directly. And the cigars, they come with a Bevita humidification pack and a Mylar storage bag to make sure they stay fresh, whether you have a humidor or not. And of course, you can listen to this show and read every article at fieldgoals.com. And if you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts and you like the show, drop us a 5-star rating and leave a quick review. Thank you to all of y'all listening for your continued support of the show. We know you've only got so much time for podcasts in your life, and it's an honor to be a part of that for y'all. Please know that by sharing this show on social media and with your friends, you give us the juice to keep making this happen. We'll be back soon, but in the meantime, onwards and upwards, my friends.